This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Welcome to the final instalment of our look at the songs and poems of Ireland's Revolution, compiled in the collection The Indignant Muse and presented to you by myself, Terry Moylan. In this final programme, we will hear songs and poems inspired by the events of the Civil War in recordings and live performances. The writers will include Brendan Behan, Sigerton Clifford, W.B. Yeats and Ned Buckley, the Bard of Knocknagree. W.B. Yeats's Meditations in Time of Civil War, The Road at My Door, was written in 1922 and published the following year. In the fifth section, which will be read now by Manus O'Riordan, he describes his face-to-face encounters with some of the belligerents.
An affable irregular, a heavily built Falstaffian man, comes cracking jokes of civil war as though to die by a gunshot were the finest play under the sun. A brown lieutenant and his men, half-dressed in national uniform, stand at my door and I complain of the foul weather, hail and rain, a pear tree broken by the storm. I count those feathered balls of soot the moorhen guides upon the stream to silence the envy in my thought and turn towards my chamber caught in the cold snows of a dream.
Thanks, Manus. That's a very kind of impressionistic little poem. As if Yeats was, I don't know, wishes he hadn't had this encounter or something like that.
He's disturbed by it because I think the encounter, if I remember rightly, I'm not familiar with the poem until this point, but I remember reading of him experiencing a fight on the road outside Tor Ballylee between the Free Staters and Republicans, and obviously both forces were passing back and forth. And it is aloof from the Civil War, but shortly afterwards he nailed his colours to the Free State mast and became a Free State senator. And indeed, part of the reason why there had been riots against O'Casey's Plough and the Stars in 1926, it's because the Free Staters and Free State government ministers who were present there were sort of lording it over the defeated Republicans of that civil war. And the protest led by Hannah Shee Skeffington was not over the Rosie Redmond prostitute incident, but the belittling of the heroism of those who took part in the 1916 rising. I might add that the poet's brother, Jack B. Yeats, the painter, took the Republican side, and he produced the only record of Harry Boland's funeral, a painting he did of that funeral, and it is the only record because the Free State troops prevented any photographer being present.
Very good. Thanks very much, Manus.
I came to Dublin one summer evening, and what do you think of my surprise? Along the quays was a battle raging, sure I scarcely could believe my eyes. There were guns, big bounders and 18-pounders, all banging away at the forecourts there. And along the roofs there were snipers sniping, and bullets all whizzing through the air. And now, says I, have the English soldiers come back again to old Erin shore. And I a-thinking it was all over, and the British departed for evermore. Oh, begar, it's not, says a Dublin jackeen, 'tis a scrap on their own they're having now. And upon my honour, 'tis Rory O'Connor is blamed for the starting of all the row. He's in the forecourts, its walls defending, and much I admire his brave cry. But the Free Staters to him some shells are sending, where they got them all, sure it puzzles me. Then I looked again, and God bless my eyesight, there were armoured cars all painted green, and soldiers dressed in a colour likewise, and above them waved the flag Sinn Féin. Well, I stopped a week till the fight was over. You see, I could not well get away. But the forecourts fell on a Friday morning, and I'm sure there'll be a queer old bill to pay. Sure, I've seen the ruins out in France and Belgium, and the battle fronts in far off Belgrade. But the ruins I saw in dear old Dublin completely puts them all in the shade.
Thanks very much for that, Jerry. Well sung. How did the song strike you? I'd love to know.
It's a difficult song to sing, Terry, because some of the lines don't scan very well. Like I suggest that it was a reaction to just immediate reaction that somebody did to the actual thing.
Absolutely, course, yeah. very contemporary. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But the background to the song, have you looked into that at all?
Well, just bits and pieces I know, and I know from. Hearing people talk, because the Battle of the Four Courts is a big thing. The big bone of contention in it was that the actual 18 pounders that are mentioned in the song, that they were lent by the British Army to the Free State Army. And I suppose if somebody suggested to me it was another case of perfidious Albion at work again. They'd be just trying to break up, if possible, to sort of break up the accord that was there.
That's right. I read only recently too that they lent them the artillery pieces, and they had a stock of, I don't know, 10,000 rounds in Inchicore in the Richmond barracks, but they gave something like 100 to Collins to attack the forecourts.
But I think the big thing about it is the incongruity of it, of former comrades fighting each other now, people who had gone right through the period from 1918 to 1921 and really fought a good fight, and then suddenly to find themselves on opposing sides and killing each other. And the whole Civil War thing was an awful thing when we think of the thing in Ballyseedy and places like really, like, there's nothing worse than a Civil War, because it's more vicious than when you're fighting against a common enemy.
It was a tragic thing to happen. And one other aspect of it that we shouldn't forget is that with the destruction of the forecourts, the Public Records Office was destroyed. And it's only in the recent past, with a project by Trinity College, that they've virtually put that thing back together again a century after its destruction. So,
but there was lots of material lost during it, like the records all gone, and people that were claiming for looking for birth certs and stuff like that, and for, you know, trying to trace ancestry. It was a huge big block on it.
Yeah. Big hole in Ireland's past, that's
huge,
right.
Yeah.
The most high-profile casualty of the Civil War was undoubtedly Michael Collins. He inspired admiration both from the Republicans and from the Free Staters. Brendan Behan wrote a fine song about him called My Laughing Boy. He never recorded it himself, but the actor who played Brendan in many stage performances, Neil Tobin, did record it, and we have it for you now.
Was on an August morning, all in the dawning hours, I went to take the warming air, all in the mouth of flowers. And there I saw a maiden and heard her mournful cry. Oh, what will mend my broken heart? I've lost my laughing boy. So strong, so wide, so brave he was, I'll mourn his loss to sore. When thinking that I'll hear the laugh, our springing step no more. Oh, curse the times and sad the loss, my heart to crucify, that an Irish son with a rebel gun shot down my laughing boy. Oh, had he died by Pierce's side, or in the GPO, killed by an English bullet from the rifle of the foe, or for forcibly fed while Ash lay dead in the dungeons of Mountjoy. I'd have cried with pride at the way he died, my own dear laughing boy. My princely love, can ageless love do more than tell to you? Goramela Mahagot, for all you try to do, for all you did and would have done, my enemies to destroy, I'll praise your name and guard your fame, my own dear laughing boy.
Throughout his life, Ned Buckley, who lived from 1880 to 1954 and was known as the Bard of Knocknagree, wrote verse describing, sometimes in humorous, sometimes in cynical style, the places and events of his home place in Slievelochra. In this one, The Battle of the Bower, he records an incident in September 1922 when pro-treaty forces were ambushed by anti-treaty forces at the Bower, a spot between Rathmore and Killarney. He uses the standard mock-heroic device of comparing the fighting to the exploits of Leonidas or Horatius, the 300 men and three men of Davis's A Nation Once Again.
You may talk about Thermopylae or the Bridge of Rome. You may mention wars of foreign lands or battles fought at home. But from the days of the Crusades until this present hour, there ne'er was such a rattle as the Battle of the Bower. The people who were listening thought that all the world was dead. There was such noise of machine guns and such discharge of lead. No horse or man could pass that road with either meal or flour. No pigs were fed the day they fought the Battle of the Bower. Men who let the Republic up fought men who let it down, and men who held the country shot at men who held the town. They fought the black and tan until they said they'd smashed this power. But now they fought each other at the Battle of the Bower. Some people say that both sides won. Some say none won at all. And each side swears that they saw scores of the other side to fall. But one thing's true, that bullets flew in a dark and deadly shower, though none were killed or wounded at the Battle of the Bower. For miles around at that fighting ground, men did no work that day, but when they met at night time, to each other they did say, "The divil a peace we'll ever have till something come and scour this land of such as those who fought the Battle of the Bower."
The Battle of the Bower, which is from the time of the Civil War, written by Ned Buckley, a humorous piece. Maybe you'd describe it for us.
Yeah, the Bower itself is a little townland, not too far from Killarney itself. It's between Rathmore and Killarney, very near the little village of Barraduff, which might be known to some listeners, very bad bend in the road in the village. In the Civil War, that whole area, which is encompasses a lot of Slievelochra, was very, very active in the War of Independence itself. But then when the Civil War came, obviously there was the split and they fought each other. And what's significant about this particular battle is that while there was an enormous amount of exchange of fire, apparently nobody was hurt. That's pretty well the significance. Now, as well as that, what comes through in the poem is that Ned Buckley himself, hadn't much time for the Civil War for either side, and because that's the way the poem ends up, that he's hoping that the country, you know, will be rid of all this kind of carry on in the future.
The Kerry poet Sigerton Clifford wrote many fine poems, and some of them have been turned successfully into songs, most notably probably The Boys of Barnashroyde. The singer Tim Dennehy is a great admirer of Sigerton Clifford and has put tunes to several of his poems, including the next one we're going to hear, The Ballad of the Tinker's Son.
I was in school, it was the 1st of May, and the day the tinker came, with his wild wide eyes like a frightened hare's, and his hand with its touch on flame. We liked the length of his bare brown legs, the patches upon his clothes, the grimy strength of his unwashed hands, and the freckles about his nose. The master polished his rimless banks, and he stared at him hard and long. Then he stood him upon the shaky bench, and he called on him for a song. Oh, the tinker looked at our laughing limbs, then a voice like a timid bird's, "Dinned the master's bidding," and these were his singing words. My father was jailed for sheep stealing, and my mother is black as a wench. My sister off ran with the Sheridan clan, and my brother's dead drunk in a dench. No trolley jail won't kill the devil, but trolley jail won't kill my dam. I'll mend you a kettle for one and four, and I'll bring home porter to me, ma'am. Then he bowed his hand as the schoolhouse shunk, wet the tears of everyone. And the master made me share my desk with the raggedy tinker's son. Oh, the days dragged on, and he sat down there, his brown eyes still a friend. He heard the scholar's drowsy hum, and turning to me he said, "What would I want with X and Y, and I singing the crooked towns, or showing a drunken farmer the making of a silver crowns? Or will you, clan, teach me to light a fire of a green twigs in the wren, nor how to twist a pheasant's neck so it will not cry in pain? And what would I want with ancient verse, or the meaning of Latin words, when all the poetry I'll ever need rings the throats of the singing birds? But he stayed at school, and his flowering mind, it grew swift as the swooping honk. Then there came a day when we said goodbye to the master who smelled of chunk. He went to the life of the ribbon roads and the lore of the tinker bands. They chained my bones to an offer stool and my soul to a clock's cold hands. But I often thought of my tinker friend, and I cursed my smirking lung. That didn't make me a tinker man, as I fought in the road to punk. With a red-haired wife and a piebald horse and a splendid caravan, roving the roads with carties and wards, the O'Briens are the coffee clan. Now the years went by and the troubles came, and I found myself again. I was back where I whittled the worn desks with the mountains and the rain. They put a trench coat on my back, placed in my hands a gun, and up in the hills with the fighting men, I found the tinker's son. And there on the slopes of the Kerry hills, our love grew still more strong. And we watched the wren on the yellow wen spill his thimble full of song. Then came a truce and I shook his hand, for a while our fighting done. But I never spoke one word again to the red-haired tinker's son. 'Tis many a year since he went away, and over the roads the vans wheel gaily to horse and to cattle fairs, with the O'Briens or the coffee clans. The tinker's son should be back again, with the roads and the life he knew. But I took the life of my red-haired friend in 1922.
After the split over the treaty, the people who rejected the treaty holed themselves up in different parts of Dublin, including the forecourts and parts of O'Connell Street. The British authorities, in the form of Winston Churchill, applied pressure to Michael Collins and the Free State government to get them out, or else they would introduce weapons themselves and they threatened immediate and terrible war. So Collins accepted the armaments and took steps to remove the anti-treaty faction from the forecourts, and this following song is about that. A Dublin Battle Ditty, June-July 1922. Oh, Churchill dear, and did you hear the news from Dublin town? They've listened to your good advice and blown the forecourts down. And likewise with O'Connell Street, the likes I've never seen. And guns, the best as per request, and lorries painted green. Sure, I met with Dick Mulcahy, and he took me by the hand. Says he, how goes it cross the town? How does the Gresham stand? These rebels want a lesson. We cannot stand their cheek. So we'll finish what the British started here in Easter week. Then Michael Collins came along and unto me did say, the guns were most effective in their work along the quay. Sure, I'm out for law and order, like Greenwood was of yore, for Churchill has just asked me, come and take my place ashore. Then along came Arthur Griffith, whom I had not seen of late. I asked him how was everything with the new free Irish state. Och, says he, it's not a free state, but an awful state I'm in. To make good all this damage, oh, where will we get the tin? Then I bid them all good evening, for the dusk was drawing nigh. It wasn't safe to be around when shots begin to fly. But this much I'll remember if I live to see the day. Next time elections come around, I'll vote the other way. W.B. Yeats' poem, The Isle of Innisfree, is known to every Irish school child, I'm sure, but Brian O'Higgins took a dim view of Yeats and of his poetry, and in this poem he pokes fun at Yeats, who had just been elected or appointed to the Senate, and he takes particular exception to the way that Yeats had anglicised Irish words and expressions. Anthony O'Farrakhan is going to read us for it now, and you'll hear how he contrasts Innisfree, I-N-N-I-S-F-R-E-E, with the Irish spelling of the same name, or contrasts Kathleen Ni Uilleachán with Kathleen Ni Houlihan, the way Yeats would have had it. Anthony O'Farrakhan.
The Isle of Innisfree, 1924, Brian O'Higgins. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree. If 'twere Innisfree now, I wouldn't know its name. And in my hut of wattles I'll be spooning with the she. Don't make it she, dear printer, for it wouldn't be the same. And in the Celtic twilight I'll destroy the ABC of Is and Ta and other things I'd dearly love to ban. For Kathleen Ni Uilleachán is different, do you see, to Kathleen, the daughter of Houlihan. The language of the Senate there shall fall upon my ear. I'll purchase me an aerial when me pension check is paid. And with my own right hand I'll draw 360 quid a year to keep the pot of broth a-boil in the W.B. loud glade. And when the vulgar Gaelic tongue is dead, as Finn McCool, don't print it Fionn McCool, or 'twill baffle W.B. I'll teach Yeatsonian Irish in a purely pagan school to keep the home fires burning in the Isle of Innisfree.
Thank you for joining me, Terry Moylan, for this series on the songs and poems that were written in response to the events in Ireland during the decades of revolution from the 1880s to the 1920s. We have heard poems and songs by well-known writers and by writers who deserve to be better known, and these were performed for us by singers on recordings and singers who keep the tradition alive today. We hope that the programmes will have entertained and informed you, and we look forward to your company for other programmes that we have planned. For more information on the series, or to listen back, please visit nearfm.ie.
This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.